The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
All right, so it's time now for your lunchtime doctor. Dr. Brittany Dean is standing by. Of course, we're live here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangi 106.1 and Sky 99.5. And remember, of course, our number 625-2257, or you could WhatsApp us at 3061065. You could also message our other station that they will send any of your medical questions right to us. We love answering your questions and hearing from you. So we take it over to Dr. Brittany Dean. Good afternoon, Doc.
Good afternoon. It is great to be here again, and we have another exciting topic to talk about today. So, you know, while we are talking about a specific topic, feel free to ask any of your medical questions and we can have a conversation. Call in, send a WhatsApp.
Yeah, like I just gave the number 625-2257 and 3061065. So what are we going to be talking about today, Doc? I see we have arthritis on the line.
Yes, so we are going to be talking about arthritis. You know, a lot of people call in talking about joint pains or hand pains or feet pain. So today we're going to be discussing arthritis in its entirety, and we're going to discuss the different types of arthritis and even some preventative measures that we can take to prevent arthritis from coming on.
So exactly what is arthritis and what are the most common types that people should be aware of?
So the term arthritis, that is actually a general term, and it really is a group of conditions, and what these conditions do, it causes a lot of inflammation, pain, stiffness, swelling in the joints, and it does affect millions of people worldwide. And the overarching complication that we can get with arthritis would be reduced mobility and a decline in your quality of life. If you can't move as well as you should be able to, your quality of life is going to decrease. But the most common types of arthritis are osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, and psoriatic arthritis. Now, there are actually over 100 different types of arthritis. A lot of people don't know that. But like I said, the most common types we will see would be osteoarthritis and rheumatoid and psoriatic. Now, each type actually has different causes, different symptoms, and of course, the treatment options are going to differ. But they will all involve some sort of joint damage to varying degrees. And osteoarthritis is actually the most common form, and we usually refer to that one as the wear and tear arthritis. And we usually see it in the older population because, you know, as you get older, you will have a breakdown in your cartilage, and it is going to lead to a lot of stiffness and reduced mobility of your joints. But later on, we're going to see how each specific arthritis is going to differ from each other. And recognizing the differences in all these different types of arthritis, it's definitely key to have, you know, the appropriate treatment and management, because each type is going to have its own unique approach.
All right, so definitely, what are the primary causes and risk factors for developing arthritis?
Now, the causes of arthritis, they will vary very widely depending on the type, but there are general risk factors that will span all different types. And, you know, one thing that we see commonly in all of them is increasing age. So as you get older, you are more prone to developing any type of arthritis. If you have a family history as well, you may be more prone to developing that particular type of arthritis. And in even some cases, gender. So we will see females being more prone to specific types versus males being prone to specific types, and even joint injuries. So if you were young and you've had some sort of athletic injury, chances are as you get older, you will get some wear and tear of the joints. And even lifestyle factors we have to look at. Obesity is going to cause a lot of straining on your joints. Now, age, like I said, is a significant factor in osteoarthritis, because over time, wear and tear is going to accumulate in the joints. Now, family history and genetics, that can predispose each individual to specific types, particularly if it is an autoimmune-related arthritis, like rheumatoid arthritis. Those are actually more common in people who do have a family history of that specific disease. And of course, we must talk about how our lifestyle choices will also play a role. For instance, if you are carrying excessive weight in places, for example, in your legs or in your abdomen, that is going to add additional strain on your weight-bearing joints, and that is going to increase your risk of developing osteoarthritis. And of course, the injuries or the repetitive stress to your joints, that can also lead to arthritis because it damages the cartilage and it will cause some sort of chronic inflammation in the joints as well. And of course, you will have other potential triggers depending on the type of arthritis. For example, the autoimmune, remember rheumatoid arthritis. When I say autoimmune, your body is sort of attacking itself. So things like infection and smoking and even certain hormonal factors, all of these things may contribute to the development of rheumatoid arthritis and any other type of inflammatory arthritis as well. So it is important for us to understand these risk factors because in order for us to prevent and for us to have some sort of early intervention, we need to know the risk factors beforehand. And of course, it is important for your doctor to know about your family history, for you to know about your family history and your genetics, etc., so that we can have the proper management tailored to you specifically.
All right, folks, we will be stopping shortly to just answer some of your questions. Remember, you'll give us a call in a little while of 625-2257 and keep sending those WhatsApp messages at 3061065, not only on arthritis, but any other medical topic that you choose. Can you explain the difference between osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis and how these two types affect the body?
So osteoarthritis is the most common type. We definitely will see this as you get older, and it is what we call a primarily degenerative condition, because what happens over the years, our cartilage that is supposed to support our joints, it gradually is going to wear down. And when that cartilage wears down, it is going to lead to pain, stiffness in the joints, and decreased joint function. Now, osteoarthritis, a lot of people will commonly experience it in their weight-bearing joints. And when I'm talking about weight-bearing joints, these are the joints that are responsible for holding your body up. So people will experience hip pain or knee pain or even spine. And a lot of people do experience pain in their hands as well. As that cartilage is wearing away, your bone is going to rub against each other. And that is how we get the pain, the swelling, and even the formation of little bony growths. And over time, this joint damage, it will lead to a decrease in your mobility and, unfortunately, a decline in your quality of life if it is not treated promptly and managed appropriately. Now, rheumatoid arthritis, on the other hand, that is an autoimmune condition. Remember, we talked about autoimmune yesterday when we were talking about type 1 diabetes. Now, autoimmune means our body's own immune system starts to attack itself. In rheumatoid arthritis, the immune system is going to mistakenly attack the lining of the joints. And this is going to lead to inflammation, erosion of your joints, and even damage that can extend to other areas of the body. So people with rheumatoid arthritis, they are not just going to experience the joint pains and the joint swelling and inflammation, but they are also going to experience other symptoms as it relates to their skin, their eyes, and even their cardiovascular or the heart system as well. The rheumatoid arthritis, what we typically see is that it will affect multiple joints symmetrically. And what I mean by that is that it's not just one side you will feel it. You may feel it on both sides. So it will usually start in your smaller joints, like in your hands or in your feet. But while both osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis involve the joint pain and the stiffness, rheumatoid arthritis will also cause some sort of systemic symptoms. So anything that overrides our entire bodily systems. So people may experience fever and fatigue with rheumatoid arthritis. And if the rheumatoid arthritis is not managed appropriately, it can actually progress very rapidly. And it can be very debilitating for people who do or are diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis.
All right, folks, I've seen the WhatsApp messages coming in. 3061065. We'll be taking them shortly in just a short while. Just one more question here. What are some of the early signs and symptoms of arthritis that people should watch out for?
So, of course, any early signs or symptoms, it is going to vary depending on the type of arthritis. But often, traversing all the different types of arthritis, you will experience joint pain and stiffness and swelling. And pain in the joints, especially if you've had periods of inactivity or if you're waking up, that is a common initial symptom. So people may also notice stiffness in the affected joints, and it may make it difficult for them to start moving freely, especially in the morning. And some people may experience swelling and warmth around the joint because that is a sign of inflammation, particularly in inflammatory types of arthritis like the rheumatoid arthritis. So in addition to, you know, the joint-specific symptoms, some types of arthritis, especially in the autoimmune forms like rheumatoid arthritis, people may experience the systemic symptoms as well. The fatigue, the fever, and even skin rashes in cases like psoriatic arthritis. Those things can also accompany the joint pain. So it is important for us to have early detection of these symptoms so that we can make a diagnosis quicker and treat you appropriately. So it is crucial to have a very swift diagnosis because we want to slow down the progression of the disease and preserve your joint function as well. So if you are experiencing the symptoms that I just mentioned regularly, you should definitely consult your doctor for a proper evaluation.
All right, let's get some of the WhatsApp messages on here. 3061065. 3061065. Let's listen to this message.
Morning, Doc. I know this is probably out of your topic, but I know you said when you're exercising, you exercise at least 150 minutes per week, right? But I try to do that sometimes four times a week, right? I work for an hour. But when I get up in the morning, sometimes my resting heart rate is wrong, sometimes 49 51, and when I start walking, brisk walk in the morning, it is only go up to like 115, 118, sometime you might get 120. You can tell me if that's okay. Thanks.
So in terms of somebody who has proper cardiovascular training, and if you're doing an hour a day for 4 days a week, that is actually very good. A lower resting heart rate, about 49, we definitely expect to see that in athletes and people who have an increased efficiency in their heart and strength from regular cardiovascular training. So it is very fine that your resting heart rate is a little lower than the average person, because that means that your body has adapted to proper cardiovascular training and you have been training yourself efficiently and your heart is pumping as efficiently as it should.
All right, another question. Good afternoon, Doc. I heard yesterday, just before the end of the program, you mentioned of a health fair at Skinners Park on Saturday. Can you share more information about it before you leave, please?
Yes, sure. No problem. In fact, I'm going to have a special guest tomorrow, and we are going to be discussing health and nutrition and as it pertains to the health fair. But yes, it will be at Skinners Park on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. So it is a great way for you to get your health in check. We'll have blood pressure, sugar checking, ECGs as well. So it is great for most people to come out. But tomorrow we will be discussing that as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hi, Doc. Can a venous insufficiency in the legs cause clots? Let's continue. I took a dinner and it was 273.
So venous insufficiency can actually increase your risk of blood clots in the veins. And what we call that is a deep vein thrombosis. And that is a potentially very serious complication because when that blood clot forms in your deep veins, usually in the legs, that can actually travel up to your lungs. So it is very important if you suspect that if you're getting any sort of calf pain, if your leg is swelling disproportionately to the other leg, usually it will be in one side of the leg, you will find that your calf is much bigger than the other side. This is usually indicative of somebody who has a deep vein thrombosis. Make sure and you go and get yourself checked out immediately, because deep vein thromboses, they can have very serious complications.
All right, let's try this call. Hello, good afternoon.
Okay. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
A question there for the doc, right? You know, I want to know if food does cause arthritis, because on yesterday's program, you know, somebody said, as it interferes with the joint pain, get plenty joint pain, I think, right? And, you know, fruits have a lot of acid. So I want to know if acid does cause arthritis, because a lot of people have refrained from even sucking a half an orange, because even they suck the orange, there's all kind of pain.
Yes.
Put swell up, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. So in terms of foods can actually contribute to inflammation, which will worsen your arthritis symptoms, especially if you have a condition like rheumatoid arthritis, which is the autoimmune form, or even osteoarthritis as well. This, I wouldn't say foods directly cause arthritis, but some foods are known to trigger or increase the inflammation, which will exacerbate the person's symptoms, the joint pain, the stiffness. So some of the common culprits that we do see would be the sugary foods and the beverages, especially sweet drinks, candy, processed foods. All of these things can lead to an increase in your inflammatory markers in your body. So, and the refined carbohydrates as well, bread, white rice, all these other things, they have a high glycemic index. And high glycemic index foods have been known to cause inflammation. Even if you are taking in a lot of red and processed meats, they contain high levels of, you know, your saturated fats and advanced glycation end products, which are compounds that trigger inflammation. Some dairy products for some individuals can irritate your tissues. And of course, the fried and processed foods, all of these things contain lots of trans fats. And, you know, all of these things can contribute to inflammation. Alcohol as well. All of the negative foods that we usually talk about, they lead to inflammation in the body, which will exacerbate the symptoms. So when you're talking about somebody who can't suck an orange or half of an orange, Depending on the orange, some oranges can have a high glycemic index, meaning that they do have lots of sugar in them or lots of fructose in them. And that can make the inflammation worse for somebody with osteoarthritis. So sometimes people know their triggers. Sometimes it is touch and go for some people. But I wouldn't say foods directly cause arthritis, but I will say that they can trigger symptoms and exacerbate them.
All right, folks, remember we're taking your questions at 625-2257. WhatsApp us at 3061065. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1 and Sky 99.5. Let's get back into the WhatsApp. Hi, I'm a 32-year-old female and I get lumps under my armpits when I'm ovulating. What's causing this?
So really and truly, during your ovulatory period, remember we have a lot of hormonal changes, and that can be something that is normal. People do develop little lumps, pain in their breast and under their armpits during their ovulatory periods because of these hormonal changes. Now, if it disappears, usually it is nothing to be very much concerned about, but we always recommend that you still go and get it checked out and get it assessed just to ensure, especially if you have a family history of breast cancer.
All right, let's take another message on the WhatsApp here.
Good morning. I've been listening and I just stumbled upon the station. It was just right in my backyard. I have sarcoidosis. I got COVID 2 years ago. I used to run on the road. I used to run. I used to exercise a lot. I'm 53 years of age. I used to exercise quite a lot. I would run like a 5 miles, 4 miles on a bad day, three miles, right? Since I got COVID, I can barely walk. I walk upstairs, a flight of stairs. I don't have any elevator, so I have to walk. And it's a challenge. I have to brace myself to walk up the stairs, brace myself to walk down the stairs. Could you assist me in any way, please? And thanks.
Okay, so in terms of sarcoidosis, for the general listeners, sarcoidosis is actually one of those inflammatory diseases. We primarily see it affecting the lungs, the lymph nodes, but it can affect other organs, the heart, the skin, the eyes. So we have an inflammatory, a cluster of these cells forming in different parts of the body. And sometimes it can impair your organ functioning. Now, remember, when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, the primary organ that it was affecting was the lungs. And it may pose a lot of additional risks, especially to persons with sarcoidosis, because their lungs are primarily affected in this disease. So if you already had affected lungs, you may have a little bit of a reduced lung function or some sort of chronic inflammation, and it usually leads to more severe respiratory symptoms. So it may be a little more difficult for you to breathe or do your daily tasks because you have chronic inflammation in the lungs. Now, there are a few things that you can do, or there are a few things that can be recommended. However, you need to get your lung function properly assessed before you can get a management that is tailored to you. And if you would like, you can leave your name and your number and we can contact you off of the air.
All right. She also says she's a pescatarian, so I don't know if diet may have anything
No, I don't think diet will have any sort of big impact here. I think the primary things that we have to look at is sarcoidosis, which is known to affect the lungs, as well as COVID-19, which is known to affect the lungs as well. So we will have a compounding effect of these two diseases coexisting in one person. And of course, the lungs are responsible for our respiratory system. And, you know, it may be difficult for you to perform daily tasks.
All right, lots of messages coming in here. Hey, good day. Sometimes at nights when sleeping, I do on my back. The issue is when I sleep with hand over the head or sleep on one arm, it becomes dead. What causes this? Sleeping on your arm.
Well, if you're sleeping on your arm, you are sort of, you know, resting on the nerves in your arm. So it is going to become numb. It is going to become tingly. Some people have pins and needles in their arms, so maybe try not to sleep on your arm. Just there are ways that you can sleep without sleeping on your arm.
Okay, good day. I have a relative that's in the hospital because both of her kidneys are infected. What could cause this? And her white blood cell count is higher than the red blood cell. Thank you.
So, when your white blood cell count is higher, that means that you do have some sort of infection. And when your kidneys are infected, and what we call both kidneys being infected is bilateral pyelonephritis. Remember, we had a segment on pyelonephritis before. So what tends to happen is that bacteria will enter the urinary tract and travel upwards to the ureters, which is the tube that connects the kidneys to the bladder. So there are several different causes. One of them is a UTI. If she has some sort of obstruction in the urinary tract, like a kidney stone or a tumor, I can't really state what the exact cause is. This is going to be dependent on her medical history. If she has diabetes, a compromised immune system, all of these different things can lead to introduction of bacteria into the urinary system. And that can lead to pyelonephritis or kidney infections.
Hi, good day, Dr. Britz. Could you tell me if orange is okay for a diabetic? Thank you.
In terms of oranges, depending, remember, there's some oranges that are not sweeter, and there's some oranges you just bite into it and it's like candy. In terms of oranges themselves, I would say that if you are eating it in moderation, they can be a good fruit choice. They are usually low, I would say, on the glycemic index scale, meaning they would have a moderate effect on your blood sugar levels compared to high glycemic index foods. But if you're talking about like a medium orange itself, you're talking about 12 grams of sugar or 15 grams of carbohydrates. It can help to slow the absorption of sugars in your bloodstream. And of course, they're rich in vitamin C and potassium and all these different things. So it is good for your immune support and your heart health. But it is very much essential for people with diabetes to actually just consume the orange fruit as opposed to orange juice. Because if you look at it, when you juice an orange, it will take about 4 oranges to get 1 glass of orange juice. And when you look at it, that is a good amount of sugars that you are getting. So I would say have it in moderation and have the fruit as opposed to the juice.
All right. Is there a certain temperature? No, there is a certain temperature in which foods are to be fried. I do not reuse oil, and I measure the oil before I use it for frying and measure it again after frying and notice that very little oil has been absorbed in the fried food. Using this method, is it still safe to continue consuming fried foods cooked at home?
No, I would suggest against it. You know, there are people who will enjoy the fried foods, but remember the oil itself has negative properties. So if you're using vegetable oil and soybean oil and all these things, they have high levels of trans fats and saturated fats. So you don't want to consume those types of fats because it is going to have a negative impact on your cholesterol. I would say try baking your foods, or if you have an air fryer, try air frying your foods. That is much better. And you're taking out the oil aspect of it. I would say the only oils that we really should be consuming would be things like olive oil or avocado oil. You want to stay away from the vegetable oils and the soybean oils and the canola oils and all of these things.
Mm-hmm. Next question is asking about arthritis. So we'll go back into our arthritis questions. Kindly explain the treatments for osteoarthritis.
Right. So in terms of osteoarthritis, there are various medications that are available. And of course, they will target specific symptoms and, of course, the underlying causes for your condition. So in terms of osteoarthritis itself, we would have the common medications. So we would usually recommend over-the-counter pain relievers like acetaminophen, or even non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs such as the ibuprofen as well. The NSAIDs themselves, they will help to reduce the inflammation in the joints, and that can actually alleviate a lot of the pain people are experiencing and improve the person's joint function. Now, in very severe cases, meaning that, you know, these medications, these over-the-counter medications are not working for the person, we would probably go on to something like a corticosteroid that can be prescribed. So either the person can have it orally, or we will usually inject it into the joint to reduce any sort of inflammation quickly. And we try to use that very sparingly because of potential side effects of corticosteroids as well.
All right. And of course, we're going to be getting back into our questions and arthritis. Remember, of course, you could still message us at 20 minutes before the hour of 1 o'clock, 12:40, 625-2257 and 306-1065. All right. So how does arthritis progress over time, and what complications might arise if it is left untreated?
So the progression of arthritis, it is going to vary significantly depending on the type, but most forms will tend to worsen over time if they're not managed adequately. So in osteoarthritis, for example, the cartilage is going to continue to deteriorate, and that is going to lead to severe joint pain and disability as the bones are starting to rub against each other. And this can even result in some sort of deformity of the joints. And a lot of people will require joint replacement surgery in very advanced cases. Now, in the case of rheumatoid arthritis, if that is left untreated, that can cause extensive joint damage as well. And we also see the systemic complications coming out of that, and it will affect the person's heart and lungs as well as other organs. So if you do not have any treatment for your arthritis, that can lead to a lot of complications beyond the joint pain and the stiffness. People with rheumatoid arthritis particularly, they are at a higher risk for cardiovascular disease because of the chronic inflammation and the chronic nature of the rheumatoid arthritis itself. And osteoarthritis limits a person's mobility. So that is going to lead to muscle weakness over time. And of course, it will further increase the risk of falls and fractures. And even in some cases, untreated arthritis will lead to a significant decline in a person's quality of life. And despite the physical ramifications of that, we also have to look at how it affects a person's mental health and their productivity and their independence. So it is essential for us to have early intervention and consistent management. All of these things are crucial in preventing the debilitating complications of these diseases.
And what are the what role does lifestyle play in managing arthritis, and are there specific dietary recommendations for individuals with arthritis?
So a lot of people think because they have osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis that the only thing that they need to do is take their medications, etc. But lifestyle factors actually play a very critical role when managing your symptoms and preventing some sort of progression of the disease. So if you are exercising regularly, that is going to help you maintain flexibility of your joints, and it is going to strengthen your surrounding muscles as well and improve your mobility over time. Weight management is also very essential, particularly when we're talking about osteoarthritis, because the excessive weight in places, if somebody has obesity, that is going to have some sort of additional strain on your joints. So if you're living a sedentary lifestyle, that can lead to increase in your stiffness and your joint pain, as well as increase your risk of developing obesity. So it is essential for persons with osteoarthritis, and even younger persons, to prevent osteoarthritis, to develop an active routine, usually with low impact exercises. So things like swimming or cycling or even stretching, that can alleviate some of your symptoms as well. And diet will have a profound effect on the management of your arthritis, especially when we're talking about the inflammatory types of arthritis like rheumatoid arthritis. So we want to focus on inflammatory foods. So the fatty fishes that are rich in the omega-3 fatty acids, leafy greens, nuts, whole grains, all of these things have been proven to reduce joint inflammation. And we also want to focus on foods that are high in antioxidants. So fruits and vegetables, they will also support your overall health and reduce inflammation throughout your body. And of course, like I said before, avoiding the processed foods, the added sugars, and the trans fats, all of that will be beneficial because those things will exacerbate inflammation. So really and truly, it's just about having a balanced diet that is tailored to your specific individual needs. And that is really just a powerful tool that we also use in arthritis management. So each person will need a diet that is tailored to them, because people can have other coexisting diseases. So if you have osteoarthritis, sometimes you may have high blood pressure or high blood pressure and diabetes. So that's why I'm saying diet needs to be tailored to each individual.
All right, folks, we'll be going back to your WhatsApp in just a short while to answer some more questions. Let's get another one on the arthritis here. How does exercise, just like the lady you called earlier on said she used to run and is even trouble to walk upstairs right now, how does exercise impact arthritis, and what types of physical activities are safe and beneficial for people with arthritis?
So, contrary to popular belief, exercise is actually very highly beneficial for people with arthritis, because it will help to reduce your stiffness, strengthen your muscles around the joints, and improve your flexibility. But of course, it is important to know what type of exercise is safe and what is the best type of exercise for persons with arthritis. So engaging in regular physical activity will also help with your weight management, and that is particularly important for the individuals with the osteoarthritis in the weight-bearing joints, like the knees and the hips. And apart from that, exercise is also going to stimulate the production of what we call synovial fluid, which is the fluid that actually lubricates the joints and reduces some sort of friction in the joints. And ultimately, that is going to improve your joint function. Not all exercises are suitable for people with arthritis. So what we want to focus on, especially if you have arthritis, would be low-impact activities. So swimming, cycling, walking, gentle yoga, those things are often recommended because they are easier on the joints, and they even provide the cardiovascular and the strength benefits. Strength training with light weights or resistance bands can actually help you maintain your muscle density and tone without placing some sort of strenuous or undue stress on your joints. So it also is important for persons who do have arthritis. You need to start gradually. Listen to your body. Avoid any sort of high impact exercises like running or jumping. Those things can actually aggravate your arthritis symptoms. And sometimes working with a physical therapist will help you develop a safe and an effective exercise routine. So if you have osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis or any other type of arthritis, you know, you don't want to find yourself being a power lifter. That is going to be very strenuous on your joints, and it is going to do more harm than good. So you want to focus on gradually getting into the resistance training, and you can do so very safely by having somebody guide you on a proper path.
All right. Are there medications available for treating arthritis, and how do these medications work to relieve symptoms?
So, like I said, each medication is going to be tailored to the type of arthritis somebody has. So, like I mentioned before, for osteoarthritis, we look at the over-the-counter medications first and foremost, like the acetaminophen or the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs to reduce inflammation in the joints and alleviate the pain and improve the joint function. And in the very severe cases, we look at the corticosteroids, give somebody a course of that orally or even inject it into the joints for to reduce any sort of inflammation quickly. But of course, we use that very sparingly because of potential side effects. Now, when it comes to rheumatoid arthritis and other inflammatory types of arthritis, we need to go into the realms of more prescription-like drugs. So there are specific classes of drugs called disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs. Those are the ones that are commonly used. So things like methotrexate or sulfasalazine. And the people who do have rheumatoid arthritis, they will be very much familiar with these names, because these are the drugs that will help slow the progression of the disease by sort of modulating your immune system. And then we have biological drugs, which are a more advanced type of disease-modifying drugs, and they actually target specific parts of the immune system, and they prevent joint damage and reduces the inflammation. Yes, each specific type of medication comes with its potential side effects, so it has to be tailored to that individual by their doctor. And sometimes we even have to combine some of these drugs for the best results for people with rheumatoid arthritis.
All right, let's get back to some of our WhatsApp questions here. Well, somebody's saying that you should eat the whole orange except the skin, and the white pectin is good for you. This fiber slows the sugar spike.
Yeah. So when you're eating the orange, you can eat the whole orange because it does provide good fiber as well. And the orange itself, like I said, it's a low glycemic index food. So it is fine in moderation for persons with diabetics, and they're completely right. It will slow your insulin spike.
All right. Good evening. I'm 61 years old and I have type 2 diabetes. My toes feel like sponge and very soft. I walk a lot, but have not walked much about 2 years now. Are there medical causes that these symptoms, medical causes?
Yeah. So if you have type 2 diabetes, remember diabetes, like I said yesterday, it does not just affect your pancreas or your blood sugar levels. It is going to affect every single part of your body. So it is going to have an effect on your arteries as well as your nerves. So it can lead to inflammation within your blood vessels themselves, and it can lead to neuropathy. And a lot of people with diabetes, they can lose feeling in their foot if their blood sugar is not properly controlled. So I definitely suggest you go by your doctor and let them examine your foot. Because once you start to lose feeling in your feet, then you're not going to pick up on the perception of pain. And you can get little things stuck in your foot and you don't even know, and your foot becomes infected. And that is how we get amputations. So please go and get your feet checked out and let them properly tailor your medications to get a proper glucose control.
All right, do fruits trigger arthritis pain? The citrus and the fruits and the acid, do these things trigger arthritis pain?
So there are, in terms of some fruits, especially fruits with a high glycemic index, you can get exacerbation of your arthritis pain or your arthritis symptoms. It really is dependent on the person, how their individual needs respond to their arthritis, as well as the fruits that they're eating and if they're eating it in moderation or not. But some people will have a specific trigger as well for their pain. So somebody said earlier, somebody eats half an orange and their pain gets really bad. So maybe that specific fruit triggers their pain, but it's not a cause, if you understand what I'm saying, for arthritis, but it can trigger, yes.
And hi, good afternoon. Does having gelatin in your diet help joint pain?
So gelatin, especially in the diet, I personally think that, you know, it is, you know, collagen. And sometimes we can promote it as a supplement that may help to alleviate joint pain, especially in cases like the osteoarthritis. There's no real evidence to say that it works. It's all anecdotal, and there's limited research supporting the benefits of the gelatin for the joint pain. But I mean, if you really want to include it in your diet, there's not much harm that it does. So you can try it out. If it works for you, that's fine. But there's no real evidence behind it.
All right. In the morning, I drink my coffee with 5 Grix oats at 10 and lunch at 1 o'clock when I check my sugar before it is in the 90s. Is that good? Also, I am very hungry before lunch.
So if your sugar is below the 90s, that is good. Yes. That means that you're not spiking your blood sugar levels too high. That is fine.
They said it was in the 90s, not below the 90s.
That's fine as well.
Okay.
So if it's in the 90s, anything below 100, that is usually good. 80 to 100, that is usually fine. I would stay away from the cricks in the morning. The oats are fine.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hi, Doc. How often can I drink Flammar MX 50 milligrams? I have already I have really bad knee pain.
What is the medication?
Flammar MX 50 milligram.
I'm not.
I know Flammar X, but not Flammar MX.
So really and truly, that is I think that's an anti-inflammatory drug, mm-hmm. and it will typically contain the same thing that I said, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, such as the ibuprofen and the diclofenac, as well as other muscle relaxants. You will get moderate pain relief with that 50 milligram dose, but you need to use it as directed by your doctor. So if you do not have a prescription for it, the box will usually tell you in the back how much, what is the maximum dose you can have that day. I am not too sure of how much the dosing is for that particular brand of medication, but I would not suggest that you take it more than 3 times a day if it contains a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory.
All right, so our final question on arthritis as we get ready to wrap up. What preventative measures can people take to lower the risk of developing arthritis, especially as they age?
So prevention of arthritis, particularly when we're talking about osteoarthritis, that is largely about maintaining that healthy lifestyle and taking proactive steps to protect your joints. So having the regular exercise is essential. The low impact activities, the swimming and the biking and the walking, those things keep your joints flexible and strengthen the muscles surrounding the joints, as well as reduce the risk of stiffness and pain. And strength training, when done properly, that can build up your muscle support for your joints and further protect against any sort of wear and tear. And avoiding injuries and practicing good form during your activities will also be key in preventative measures. So having a coach when you're starting off, or having a physiotherapist guide you along the way, all of that is essential as well. And maintaining your healthy weight is going to reduce the risk of arthritis, especially in your weight-bearing joints. And of course, we must always talk about having that balanced diet that is rich in the antioxidants from your fruits and vegetables, and your anti-inflammatory foods from your fatty fish, your omega-3 fatty acids. All of these things can help to reduce inflammation in the body in a holistic sense. And of course, you know, just your general health, you have to look out for avoiding smoking, managing stress. All of these are important because all of these things also contribute to inflammation. And if there's a family history of arthritis, it is important for you to have a conversation with your doctor and health, so that we can have timely interventions and reduce the risk or delay the onset of your arthritis symptoms as well.
All right, Doug, well, that'll be it for today. We had a full pack show today. Lots of questions asked.
See you tomorrow.
All right, tomorrow, Women's Wednesday, and time is flying. All right, so that was your lunchtime doctor for today, folks.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.